I love that your son is joining us.
Me too.
That's great.
He's very curious. He's very educated. So I'm glad he's joining us.
Fantastic.
And then we have... Okay, great. Okay, good. Good. So it's just after 7, so we can get going. Okay. So it's time to bring our mental factors to this place and now. So just kind of, first of all, before you do a 3 mental prostrations. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Tamashriye. And again, by mental prostrations, you are respecting the teachings, you're humbling yourself, and you're leaving yourself open to learning. It's typically done forehead, between the eyes, throat, bring it to the heart and then up. Okay. And it develops good qualities. Anyways, so now we'll do just calm abiding, and then we'll lead into motivation from there. I think everybody's familiar with the position of a straight back. Okay. If you're sitting on the floor, then it's in a Vajra position, folded legs, like you see in the picture. Your arms are relaxed. Bring your palms right over left. And hope the thumbs are touching each other. Your head is slightly tilted forward. And your jaw and mouth are also relaxed. And then your tongue is touching on the palate behind the teeth on the top part. And your eyes are either slightly open or slightly closed. So you can close them in the beginning, but it's suggested that you keep them slightly open. Again, once you just scan your body, make sure there is no tension anywhere. If you find some tension by sitting a certain way or your legs are too tight, or just relax. Then take a few deep breaths and then bring your attention inward. Okay, for each inhalation and exhalation, simply counting your mind silently. Maybe you can do nine count of nine. So for every exhalation and inhalation, that is 1. Then exhale, inhale, 2. Okay, and so forth, while keeping your attention on the breath, on the rhythmic in and out cycle. And don't try to control your breathing in any way. Just let it come and go naturally. And continue to keep your mind on that breath. Once you finish your count of 9, just stay there for a moment and just observe your mind. No expectation, don't make it tight, just look at it. Just observe. If there is one thought that's carrying you away with the story, simply let it go, just like clouds passing by in the sky. Don't focus on it. Just observe and let it go. And just see the space in between. Okay. So we'll set the motivation while you're in this meditation mindset. So before we begin, make an effort to ensure that the motivation for listening to the teachings and thinking about them is appropriate for this teaching, which is inspired by the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras that were provided to all the disciples of Buddha, especially those who seek Supreme Buddhahood. Therefore, it is appropriate to generate a Mahayana motivation, taking the objective of oneself achieving the state of supreme enlightenment, so that one will be a perfect cause for the welfare of all living beings. In order to achieve that, it is necessary to gain a host of realizations, one of the most important of which is the realization of correct view of reality. In order to generate that, it is necessary to engage in those practices of listening, thinking, and meditating on the Perfection of Wisdom teachings. Again, listening, thinking, and meditating on the Perfection of Wisdom teachings. We are here and now to practice listening to these teachings, which generates the wisdom of listening that supports thinking about what was heard. This in turn produces the wisdom of thinking that supports the meditation on what is understood by thinking. This in turn produces the wisdom of meditation. It is through this path that we enter the Arya path and ultimately achieve Buddhahood. On the outline, we have only completed 3 of the 6 sessions, this being the 4th. It is not difficult to complete all 6. Last week, I introduced you to the 4-part analysis, which is an ultimate analysis to identify the emptiness of true existence. We spent a great deal of time discussing the first of those, which is identifying the object's true existence. The others will follow. While setting this intention, I would also like to read a section from Lama Tsongkhapa's 3 principal aspects of the path, because the beginning of this session deals with dependent arising, which is called the King of Reasons. Lama Tsongkhapa equates dependent arising with emptiness. Nagarjuna also does this in his opening verse of the book Verses on the Fundamental Wisdom. Lama Tsongkhapa states, "One who sees the infallible cause and effect, infallible means certain, so one who sees the certain cause and effect of all phenomena in samsara and nirvana and destroys all false perceptions has entered the path that pleases the Buddha. Appearances are infallible dependent origination." Again, infallible means certain. "Voidness is free of assertion or declarations. As long as these 2 understandings are seen separate, one has yet not realized the intent of Buddha. When these 2 realizations are simultaneous and concurrent, from a mere sight of infallible dependent origination comes a certain knowledge that completely destroys all modes of mental grasping. At that time, the analysis of the profound view is complete." Lama Tsongkhapa is a famous in Tibet for his presentation on emptiness. He had a special way of presenting it. He is the founder of the Gelug tradition, Gelu literally means virtuous. This tradition also known as Ganden tradition, G-A-N-D-E-N, because he had a mountain hermitage called Ganden. Ganden means joyful. Is the name of both a paradise of desire realm of gods and also the paradise where the next founding Buddha, Maitreya, resides. His tradition is popularly compared to the other Buddhist traditions in Tibet as the one that presents the basis, path, and fruit of Buddha's teaching. There are different ways of presenting Buddha's teachings in order to sneak the right view in between all hard-headed beliefs that people have. Nama Tsongkhapa does it, preserving the validity of ordinary valid perception on basis of Dharmakriti's epistemology or logic. Lama Tsongkhapa makes fine distinctions between the valid part of an ordinary person's experiences and the deceptive part. Even Lama Yeshe mentioned one time, in reference to all the talk about avoiding the extreme of nihilism in developing the right view, but in a way that maybe, he said, was not so bad to get a little nihilistic. He said, people cling too strongly to their beliefs and they can benefit from the assertion that none of their experiences have anything to do with reality. However, according to Madhyamika view, it means being in the center between the extremes of existence and non-existence. Okay, thank you. And let's bring your attention back to the class. I thought this motivation was kind of very interesting because it kind of covers some of the topics that we have touched upon. Okay, so it gets you in the mindset to understand this. And what I want to do today is, obviously, we've just finished the meditation. We'll do a review. I'm not going to go through the details of the first class and not too much of the second class. I will, however, cover it quickly. And then I'll focus a little bit on the third so that we can get to the new class. So there's a link throughout and you understand what we've covered. And then we'll review the questions. I have some questions that I want to ask and we can discuss them if we have time. Then we have a meditation on four-point analysis of an eye. This is a little different than what we finished. And then we'll dedicate. Okay? So I made this slide up so that I want you to connect. I know that this class can be the logic and trying to teach the tools, and we get into this nitty-gritty of logic sometimes, and we forget the larger picture. That in everything, when I review, all the way from beginning till class 3, I want you to go through this in your mind. How does this relate to emptiness? And then find out for yourself, what does it mean for me? I want you to think that. What does it mean? So I get it, right? We have logical understanding. We are intelligent people. We can understand some basic concepts. But do we truly understand it? And I want you to make a little connection more today, okay? This will be the peak of this logical thinking. And from here on out, we'll cover more of dependent arising in the next class, touch a little bit of Heart Sutra, and then summarize. But I want you to walk away at least knowledge-wise, understanding what is this all about and how it helps you in so many ways, okay? And we need to understand that. So let's think about it. When I'm going through that, you can see that we use the words like ultimate reality, emptiness of true existence. We use the word shunyata, selflessness, emptiness. We can go on and on. They all are synonymous. Okay? You can simply think we are looking at the ways they truly exist. Very important. Why? So what's the purpose? Why is it so important to know all that? The second point, we need to know emptiness to eradicate the fundamental confusion that we have, the concepts and the way we see things, the way we interpret things, the things that we get attached to. Then we create all this cyclical one thing after another that starts the whole samsara for us. So we want to see how we can take the root of that out, of the problems out. Okay, so what we are removing is what we call ignorance, active misconception of reality. Not the ignorance of, oh, I don't understand how coffee is to be made. I don't understand how computers work. That's not what we are talking about. That's very fundamental ignorance. We are talking about active ignorance of how we see things. Okay, so we don't see the true nature of things, which leads to many obstacles. It results in recycling in samsara, birth, suffering, sickness, old age, death, and then bring it down to even more mundane level, like here and now, in your home, in your daily life. You can do so many things. You can either go on the wrong path with creating anger, attachment, that says, I didn't get it, me, mine, and all that, and get exaggerated in that view. But you can also, once you remove the ignorance, you can also develop some good things like love and kindness and virtuous mind, attain nirvana and lead from suffering. So ignorance is the obstacle, right, to liberation. That's fundamental. And so when we are going through all of those things, when I talk about the history, when I talk about what Nagarjuna said, when we talk about the four-point analysis, when we go through this, in back of your mind, you are thinking about these are tools that will make you eventually think how many lifetimes, if not at least in this life, we've been programmed to think a certain way, right? How we see things right now. Then this just wakes you up to say, hey, it's fine. It's okay. You can have conceptual visual. This is a cup and that's my computer and this is my car. This is my desk and this is a class. No problem. Nobody's denying that. However, when you really investigate the nature of how we see things, we exaggerate the solidity on it. We forget how truly it is dependent arising. It does not truly exist on its own essence. And it's very important that once you understand that, you understand how people work, how our minds work. And once you understand that, then you see the world a little differently. And we will talk about that a little bit today. And again, that along with bodhicitta mind, which now you can develop because you have a better understanding, you now are on the expedited train to achieve Buddhahood. Okay? So you become fully awakened after that and have a perfect compassion, wisdom, and power. Become enlightened. That's why we are learning in emptiness. Because I know that because of a class format, you go through history of Buddha and Mahayana, Hinayana, Nagarjuna said, Lama Tsongkhapa said, you better understand emptiness. But in your mind, I want you to think why. How does it impact me? How does it help me? How will it change me? And can I learn this? How can I learn this? Three ways. You listen, you think, and you meditate. And it requires meditation because not everything can be answered through words. You need to come to a point in your mind saying that, what does this mean and what does that mean and how does it help? You will see, you will reach a point. Okay? So I wanted to just give you a good introduction to why even review sometimes. It is not to just connect you to the teachings and what I've covered so far, but to get back in your mind, how does it relate to what we are learning? All right? Oops, it does this ghostly thing. There's a formless being here somewhere. Okay. So just a quick, I'm not going to cover in details. The first session, you already know, it was an introductory. It was a DV12 session, right? Discovering Buddhism 12. We looked at videos, nice introduction. And to establish the lineage, it is to establish foundation that this teaching comes all the way from Buddha. This was not made up somewhere. That was the main point. And to establish our lineage teachings from Nagarjuna to Atisha to Lama Tsongkhapa and how these teachings are now coming to us directly from the people who are the champions of emptiness, subject matter. And so we are following those footsteps. Then, so let me get to the session two. We talked a little bit about the principles, the three principal aspects of the path. Okay. So what are they? Anybody remember? What are the three principal aspects of the path? So I'll tell you, it's not a quiz, guys. Feel free to talk when I ask a question. I think it's good to verbalize sometimes. It's good to get it out of your system. Even if it is incorrect, no big deal, right? You don't lose anything.
So renunciation.
Excellent.
That's the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Bodhicitta. Here's the second one, and then emptiness, the realization of emptiness.
Those are the three principal aspects of the path. Thank you so much. Yes. And if I were you, if you've gone through all the DB modules, then you get a chance, and if you have the time, go to the library or go to the bookstore when you're able to, or to Amazon, if you're able to afford. Find a book on three principal aspects of the path by Lama Tsongkhapa. And I would read it. And if somebody wants to borrow, I have some. I'll be more than happy to lend it. I think it's important to understand. It talks a good bit about renunciation, meaning a real yearning to not come into this cycle of death and suffering and all that. It's just a yearning to go towards enlightenment. It's more of that than anything else. So you cannot be so stuck into mundane activities that you feel like, okay, I can do this and that. No, you kind of have a feel that I want to really achieve this. And then, of course, you need to have knowledge of emptiness, because then you see how reality is, so you can function correctly, see things correctly, and then with the yearning of bodhicitta, developing kindness and love, you are on the path to become a bodhisattva, ultimately to Buddha. Okay? So very important pieces. We also talked about, you know, that emptiness is an antidote to obstacles to liberation. That's when you realize emptiness, that's the biggest antidote that we have to any obstacle that comes in your way. Okay? And because of that, we also kind of went through very quickly, just at least this is not the class to discuss the 12 links in detail, but I just wanted to get you an idea that how when Buddha was enlightened, or awakened, I should say, under a Bodhi tree, he saw this. He saw it almost backwards, that, okay, why there is death and rebirth? What happens before that? What kind of a person are you that would have such a fear that you would come back again in this cycle again? What is the cause for that? And then he went all the way back saying, oh, clinging, oh, craving, oh, the senses, oh, how we think, see things as real. And then all the way where it begins, back to the root, ignorance of not knowing how things are. So it was important to see that. So that's why I said it. But there's enough in FPMT links. If you go to Lama Yeshe or FPMT, there's some beautiful write-ups on the 12 links and how to see them, how to view them, and how they work together. So just so you understand that. We also saw the wheel of life, right? And what was that? It was just a simple depiction of picture. You see those tankas everywhere. And it's very nice to see that it again depicts this cycle, cyclic rebirth and death cycle that we are in, the samsara. And it starts with the center with the three poisons. First one being ignorance. It's depicted as a pig, actually, if you look at it. I don't know. There's some story behind it. The hub it represents the three poisons: ignorance, attachment, and aversion. The second layer represents karma. You see the black and the white side, and that just says good karma, bad karma, right? In short, the third layer represents the six realms of cyclic existence. Upper realms are on the top three, bottom are the lower realms. The fourth layer represents the 12 links. Okay, and this is how we cycle. The fierce figure holding the wheel represents impermanence. Sometimes they call him the Lord of the Death, Yama. Yamankanta. Yamantaka. Sometimes they say that. Then the moon on the left top usually means liberation from the cyclic existence. And then you see a picture of Buddha on the right-hand side, which represents to you that he shows the path. Okay, so it's a good picture to see how this cyclic existence is. Okay, so would like to, at least this slide is a good slide, again, from Nagarjuna. We went through this also in class 2, a little bit about Nagarjuna, Lama Tsongkhapa, and it was again substantiating why this is important and who he was, such a powerful figure in our lineage in the teachings of Madhyamika, the centrist, the middle way. And these were his words. We went through this, just a quick look. This was the wheel of cycle that we just went through. We also looked at Heart Sutra a little bit. We read it once, and I said this was probably the golden nugget, I would say, in terms of the teachings of Buddha on emptiness, seen as one of the most important essence sutra. Okay, it's called the Heart Sutra, the Wisdom Sutra. And so you should be familiar with that. You should read it. It's in the prayer book. If not, you should find a way to read it, understand it. There is also a link that Linda has posted. It's a commentary on Heart Sutra. If you are so interested to understand the meaning of what that conversation was about, I think you should at least take a look at that. It will give you a very nice insight of the emptiness of things, how things exist. Even words like form is empty, emptiness is form, he has a beautiful paragraph about why it is said that way. It's like saying almost like the cup is empty, right? And so the emptiness, because the cup is empty, and because of the basis is empty, there is a cup. If cup was in essence arising on its own, there would be no cup. It's a self-existing solid thing, and we would not even recognize it as a cup. It's just a way of thinking. So don't get confused with that. I didn't want to say it too detailed. Just understand that there is some beautifully some really nicely described why its form is empty, emptiness is form. It is, then it says emptiness is not other than form. Form is also not other than emptiness. And he goes into further detail and says, he doesn't say form is emptiness. He says form is empty, does not exist from its own side. Whereas emptiness is a phenomena, and because of that a form exists. So you kind of mull over it. Otherwise, it becomes a whole other class on just that, those words. But you should, what I'm trying to tell you is, seriously, it doesn't take a long, just make a plan as part of your practice. Do a little bit of reading on emptiness, and I would suggest to you that meditate on those. Whatever you read, think about it. Just think about it for a while. Take 5 minutes. What does it mean? Why would somebody even say that? And if Buddha said that, and Buddha agreed to this, what is the thought behind it? Okay?
And of course,
yes.
Oh, sorry. We do have a question on YouTube. It seems like it might fit here if you're open to answering a question now, or would you rather wait?
If I can.
Okay. So the question is, and this has a question mark after it. Emptiness is what a newborn has? Question mark. Fill them with love and kindness.
There is some level of truth to it, but a little bit slightly off. Yes, they don't have concepts yet. They simply are, when you are just born, very naive, you can say that they don't understand intellectually what emptiness is, because they have not formed all those concepts in their mind. So they are close to realizing that. That's why they're childlike in a way, yes. So I would say it has that, close to that, but you cannot call it true emptiness, because it still has a lot of the effects. It's already begun the cycle of aging. So there is a slight difference. It's just that when we become adult, youth and adult, we have some concepts that are solidified in your head. So more appropriate to talk about as an adult. And a child, I would say, is very close to that. Okay? But it's a very good question. And you know what? I think I will do a little research to be very specific about it. And next class, I should have an answer for that. I see it in my head, but I don't want to use any kind of wrong words to describe something that may have slight difference. It's almost like you're already in the dentist chair at that point and not knowing why you're there, but you're already there. So there is a slight chance you've taken the birth, you carry some seeds with you. However, you are still naive in so many ways because you're a child. So I see that there's some emptiness of that. But as the concepts come, the name, the form, the senses form, because they still, as a birth, have senses. If I were to touch, they still feel the hurt. They may not personalize it. They just feel it, right? So there's some level, but of a much, much, much closer to that, yes.
And this student does comment, aren't concepts put there from the outside world?
Sure. I would say there are three things, how things come about. Definitely, concepts are put by, we are learned. Conventionally, we learn concepts. Mind always has thoughts. Those are notions that we have. So nominal thoughts are there. However, we create a concept based on many concepts. We start to say, if I put this, this, and this, it will be like this. That's how we, as we start to grow. Also, there are causes and conditions that bring about these things, right? And then, of course, words, thoughts, and ideas. So that is true. It is how there are some seeds that we come with, the tendencies, we would call it. Those tendencies are there at birth. However, as the body matures, the mind matures a little bit more, it is more evident, but the tendencies are already as a seed existent even in a child. You come from previous life with those seeds in it, which will eventually show up. Okay. There's a whole class on karma that tells you that how you have a throwing karma during the death. And that's what your propensity is then to take birth based on those karmic seeds, those tendencies in that form. And then when you are born, you already have those tendencies. Okay? And we go into detailed explanation that you see many times parents are uneducated, but the child can become a PhD. Sometimes parents don't even teach music, but somebody can become a musician. There are some propensities and tendencies already existing. Okay? All right. To move on. And we'll take class number 6. Maybe we can deep dive into some of these questions because the class 6 is going to be short. And we will discuss some of these things. Is that okay with everyone? All right, we talked a lot about ignorance, the misknowledge of reality, right? Ignorance that is the root of cyclic existence is not a mere lack of knowledge. We already talked about it. It's active, okay? And then we got into detail about what Dharmakriti says, that external conditions can play some part in ignorance. Internal conditions and emotions can play a part in ignorance. External conditions, like if there's a bush, sometimes you think it's a person. Okay, there's a mirage and you think it's real. So they can play they can cheat you a certain way. But internal conditions, just think about how we misinterpret things. Some people have mental conditions. Some people have hallucinations. Some people are really mentally ill. They have different concepts. Now think about when you're angry. That's a big, big thing. When you're angry, look what happens, strong emotion. Look how you start with a little anger, then all of a sudden you are really, really angry, and then what happens? You're ready to hurt somebody. You think already in your mind, I wish this guy goes away, or this girl goes away, or this. You start to think very negative things. So you can see that how ignorance starts to play a role in developing this kind of samsaric thinking. So we talked about that. We generally talked about personal identity, that during the lifetime you start to collect these tendencies. This is what gives you your real identity. And at this point, I want you to again think, what does this have to do with emptiness? This is again showing you that if you are ignorant to the way things truly exist, we develop all kinds of wrong views, concepts, ideas, and then what happens? You create this chatter mind. Geshe-la really nicely talked about it even last Sunday. Maybe there's a chance I'll speak a little bit to it at the four-point analysis time. But this is where me, my, your starts, right? And then you create this personality. And this is what you go to all the time. Whenever, no matter how good you are, there are some tendencies we latch onto. And that becomes your identity. And guess when the time is to go, what goes with you? That's what goes with you, not anything else. So just be mindful, and that's why it's suggested that we habituate ourselves looking at reality, creating virtuous mindset, and then if nothing at the end, practice taking refuge. If you're a Buddhist, then you take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and you have a little better way of getting out of this without clinging, or at least clinging to the right things. Okay. Are we okay until now? Is there any confusion so far? Pretty straightforward right now. History, ignorance, life cycle, the 12 links, and the reason behind it. Remember the first slide? Think what we are trying to do. We are trying to cut the root of the problems we have right now, which is caused by the active misconception of the truth of the way things exist, ignorance. That's one reason for it. And we are slowly leading towards analyzing that a little further. So now we get into a little logic, right? So the reason logic is needed is not to bore you. The logic is needed because we have so many thoughts the way we are programmed right now without knowing the reality. We've programmed ourselves so many times over and over and over again, and it's very difficult to undo unless there is a tool available to logically see things and say, aha, that impresses. That you can incorporate in your toolbox so that you can start to see the way things are. Okay? And you want to do that to cut ignorance and so that you can be liberated. Okay? Keep that in mind at all times. Okay, we went through this four-point analysis, and just as a quick thing, first point, identifying the person as it is misconceived by ignorance. What we are trying to say is, whenever you do analysis, logically speaking, you have to identify the object first. That you're firmly good, that out of all these things, so you don't want to negate too much, and you don't want to make things so solid. So what you want to do is find what is it that you're negating. In four-point analysis, it's typically we're looking for the I, the me, the I. Okay? So once you feel that, you go through this really mild meditation. I'll walk you through it. It takes maybe even 2 or 3 minutes. You don't even have to meditate. Just listen to me with the eyes closed. And you can do this on a daily basis. Very quick meditation when you're doing emptiness meditation. You can, instead of going through all this looking for the I, you can do this too, no doubt. But just so you understand that, simply sitting in a chair, think about it sometimes. There is a brief and extensive meditation, and I'll just walk you through it in a minute. So once you know that the I that you're looking for is firm, then you have to find out, deciding if that I existed and is it findable. And then you say, okay, well, I get it. You know, it's not in the body, it's not in the hands. I got all that. But you got to really establish, is it the mind, is it the body, or is it something put together? Or is it the package, what we call person? Is that an I? Unless you go through that thinking, you will still feel uncomfortable thinking there's something there. But you want to really face it and think it's not, or is it? So you must look for it. So see if it's findable or not. And then the three and fourth are mechanical. Then if it is your body, then it must be part of the aggregates. Or is it independent completely? If it's not part of the aggregate, then it must be hanging out somewhere. It just comes in and goes as it pleases, no? So we, it's just, you take, it's like saying, okay, remove the sheep and the goat, and then what's remaining is the bull, because we are sheep, goat, and a bull, and we remove the sheep and the goat, the bull remains. So it's a logical way of saying, if we looked at for it in the body, we've looked at it in the mind, we made sure it's not the aggregate, or is it the aggregate? Once you can't find it over there, then it must exist independently. And once you know that if it doesn't exist that way, then you can be confirmed in your mind that there is no such thing. Then you have to investigate, then where the heck does it come from? Why do you feel that feeling in your chest? That's what you need to meditate on. Where does this come from? It's purely imputed by your mind to this body-mind complex, purely attributed. That's all it is. But then because of all the things that we collect with that ignorance of I, become stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, and all of a sudden everything becomes this view that we create in this today's world. And what we are trying to do is, if you kind of undo that a little bit, see how you feel and see how liberating it is. And then again, in the back of your mind, you should be thinking, so what does that do? Once I do that, so what? So think about that and we'll get to it. A little bit of thought.
We do have another question, Hemant.
Sure, sure.
About what you're speaking on. This student asks, when doing the four-point analysis, we are only focused on the conventional I, not the ultimate I, correct?
Correct.
So, and then the student says...
Before that question, we have to identify ultimate I versus conventional I. What is an ultimate I? I would like the student to say something.
Oh dear, so I have to speak about this. that was my question. So I was wondering, so there's the conventional I that doesn't exist, but then there's a true I, a true me that does exist, not the me, but the, you know, I do exist. And so my understanding is that when we don't find the conventional I, the me that's a person, that's supposed to lead us to finding what truly exists, that is us.
Okay,
yes.
So I will, you're sure it's in the class later on in the next class, but I will tell you a little bit about it since you're questioning it. When you meditate and you find out that the I does not exist the way we think it exists, you're left with the space-like mind. And what stays is this mere I, because you are still thinking. The phenomena is not gone. This, all these things are happening in this phenomena. All that is you do see this cup. I do see my computer. However, when I investigate it deeply, I don't find the cup in here. Same way that there is this notion that I solidly exist. And when I truly look for it, that I does not exist. What's left is what we call relative I or nominal I, imputed on for conventional purposes. There is something. You do feel pain. You feel happiness. You function. So in this phenomena of things that are happening, there is that nominal existence. And that is what allows you to create bodhicitta, to create love. All you're saying is, we don't have this. If you look at this body, there is nothing called I. Then you look at the mind and you don't find I. Because, and we'll go through that a little bit. What you are left with is what they call a merely mere I or subtle I. There is something that allows you to perceive. In this phenomena, there is something that allows us to perceive things, and that's called the nominal or relative I, also created by concepts, but something is that little there, and that's what allows you to function. We'll cover this in detail. I have a really great article, and I got permission from Venerable Rene Susi. I wrote him a letter, and I found his explanation very good. And he goes to say that, yeah, when you look in a car, you don't find the car because the car is made up of parts, tire and the steering wheel. So there is no, it requires parts. So you can call it a car, but there is no car in the carness in the car. It is all parts that pull together and functions. And he takes it further. He says, but isn't it interesting that when you go and turn the key, the darn thing runs? So we want to make sure that whatever exists is functional in how it truly exists. So when you look at the car, you don't find the carness. You label it a car through concept and knowledge and words. So you can say that these parts, causes and conditions, and causes and conditions, these are dependent arising, right? So parts, causes and conditions, and what is the third thing that has to be there in order to have dependent arising?
I'm sorry, I was thinking, so parts, causes and conditions, and independent, with independent existence part of that then?
Words and thoughts.
Words and thoughts. Thank you.
Okay. Three things. This is part of the dependent origination we'll cover in a minute. But when you do those, so nobody is negating there is in this phenomena, things do exist. You start with that thinking. However, you look at it now in your mind. Things do exist. We see each other, right? Things exist. However, when you deeply look at everything individually or yourself internally, you don't find a solid you. Everything is dependent origination. That doesn't take the fact away that you are still here and doing things. It's just moving along. So that's a nominal existence, and that allows you to function every day. We'll get a little more detail into that. So it's not called ultimate I, but you can sense it that way. A subtle, very subtle mirror.
Right, thank you.
Okay. We don't want to go through this. All these examples were fantastic examples to lead you to conclusion that how we look at reality, and that for something to exist, it must exist uniquely in space and time. And when you look at that cup, for example, the flame, when we look at the candle flame, the flame that you're looking at is not the same flame that was a moment ago. Because that essentially kind of went away, and this flame now exists. This is how things move along. Okay? The cup, we got into a little more deeper into it, because it's a great example of we look at the cup, it exists, I can drink something out of it. So this, I can say, nominal cup here exists. But when I truly look at it carefully, it's made up of parts and other things. And the word cupness means many cups in the world. In my cupboard, there are cups. In Sandra's house, in your house, there are cups. But I can't drink coffee or tea out of those cups. So it is called a general concept. And concepts are not real. It's just a thought. And the thoughts don't exist from their own side. So you can say that cup does not exist from its own side. It's just a logical way of talking about that, okay? All right. So you can, again, we'll go through all of those. And then let's go to the definitions. Oh, a good example was a rainbow. Let's see. It has a very nice magic in this computer. It does it on its own. So good example is a rainbow. You know you can see the rainbow. Conventionally, we call it a rainbow. If I were to tell Linda right now, hey, there's a rainbow in the sky, she's not going to look in the ground. She's going to look up in the sky for a rainbow, because conventionally we've agreed what a rainbow should look like. So a rainbow exists. So let's get that out of the way. It exists. Now, if you were to analyze it a little further, you find out it's a light, it's a moisture, it's a reaction of light and a moisture that creates a rainbow. So you can say that the rainbow truly does not exist. So how does this mean in what we are talking about? In other words, in this phenomena, everything is this way. They exist nominally because of concepts, right? Because of its parts, causes and conditions, and designated consciousness that labels it, or we call it thoughts and words. It labels. That's how things exist. It's also part of phenomena. However, when you truly look at individually everything, it does not have an essence of its own. It does not exist from its own side. The rainbow is not a solid rainbow. And it disappears, it appears because things are empty and dependent arising. Otherwise, if rainbow, if existed on its own, would be just rainbow all the time, right? Big thing, you know, it could not be called rainbow. You have to think through that a little bit in your head. It's hard to put it in words, but you got to get the concept that things do exist. However, things don't exist solidly. They are dependent arising, synonymous, basically. Everything, touch anything, find out everything is that way. Okay? So, and that's why it allows us to learn. Because of emptiness, there is space to grow, space to do things, changes take place, chances to do things. If we were all frigid and like a stone, and even that changes, right? Then there would be nothing to do. Think about it for a second. Because of emptiness, things exist. Okay, and we went through some other things. Let's see. Let me go through. Harry Potter was another good example, guys, how it becomes real. You can see Harry Potter. If you know Harry Potter, you can visualize him right now. It is nothing but a concept written by an author who created a reality and you create that as a concept. Now you can visualize him. You see his address, what he looks like, where he lives in England. You can see all of those things. Similarly, everything is labels and concepts. So it's important to know when I say that things exist relatively versus ultimately, right? That was a question we just had, for example. So we must understand the word, what is relative truth? What is true to be valid convention to conventional consciousness? Do we understand that? We all agree this is a cup? We agree, right? Why? Because conventional consciousness, we've agreed, made a contract with each other, something that's similar, I can drink out of and it looks like this, we're going to call it a cup. That's how it exists. Now, look it further. It is also called concealer truth or all obscuring truth, because although true on one level, it obscures the ultimate nature. It's a simple statement. Think about that, right? If I were to really, because we've given it a name and we've conventionally agreed to, we call it a cup. But if I were to really look at it, you can see a clay, I can see ceramic, I can see color, I can see particles and go on and on and on and find out that it's just how things have come together because of causes and conditions. Somebody made it, somebody molded it, somebody designed it, somebody mass produced it, then somebody sold it and we went and bought it and now we drink out of it, right? It's a dependent arising. Okay. Ultimate truth at a deeper level is understanding of ultimate nature of reality, that things are empty of true existence. Okay? And then I had method and wisdom not to mull on it at this point in time. Again, ignorance is very important. This comes up all the time, literally not seeing that which exists or the way in which it exists. Just learn that and really, really think about that. And it's true, ignorance is a fundamental delusion from which all others spring. And the very first one of the 12 links is the ignorance of independent origination. The more accurate our vision of reality is, the more informed our judgments will be. And therefore, fewer mistakes and less suffering will occur. This is why we want to get rid of ignorance. I introduce a new word. Every time I read something, this word came up, syllogism. So I said to myself, I got to put it up there. I will explain it to you in a minute. It is simply the way logic is sometimes explained. In order to create a thesis, to prove or disprove something, it needs to be put in a perspective, certain way. For example, here we go. Formless being. We can say the premise. Two premises are put together. Dogs are animals. This is an example of a syllogism, okay? Dogs are animals. We can say that. Second premise is all animals have four legs. So the logic conclusion we can derive from that is all dogs have four legs. Make sense? think about it again. If we say dogs are animals and all animals have four legs, can we say dogs have four legs? That's a logical way of thinking. Sandra, can you say, is this too much, Sandra?
Yeah, I think it's just too complicated to read it for me. I mean, because I'm not an English native speaker, it's just like, ugh. I think I need to read it.
No, take your time. I will take a little time. All right, just let's take a time. Let's go through that for a second. Oops. I don't know why this does it. This is just a word. I think I'm hearing my own voice there. It's a form of reasoning. It's a way to reason. When we reason something, whether it is true or not, this is the way they sometimes do it. They'll put one sentence and they say, and I'll give you an example, that let's say we are trying to prove that dogs have four legs. I want to prove that the dogs have four legs. And the way to prove that is to say that animals have four legs. Okay? All animals have four legs. Or you can say dogs are animals and all animals have four legs. So therefore the dogs have four legs. It's just a way of concluding. That's all it is. Don't get too hung up about it. It's just the way to think logically.
But it's not correct, right? I mean, it's not a correct way to think.
No. It is way to create a thesis, then you prove or disprove it.
Uh-huh.
It is way to lay things out. So when I say that person does not exist inherently because it's dependent arising, in order to say that, in order to prove that, you must kind of have an established way of thesis saying a person is non-existent inherently. So you put these words together and then you look for and you find it. It's just one of the ways that they do logic. It's just a word. I just wanted to show you an example. There are many other, it's Aristotelian actually, with Plato and all of those things, but this is how they used to put things to come up to a conclusion. It's just a word that is used whenever I go through a lot of these things. I find that word and I figure we'll just put it there for purposes of knowing. So at this point in time, just simply know that it is just syllogism is a way to put things down so that you can come to a conclusion to then you can prove it or disprove it. You can say, let me prove the dogs don't have four legs, or I can prove dogs have four legs. And then you go through the logic. That's all.
Okay. Because we do have another question. It says, is the mention of this word syllogism to highlight the fact that most people have assumptions based on inaccurate or ignorant perceptions of the world?
That is perfectly correct. Because you need to have an audience that already does not know. You need a target audience that comes saying, okay, I'm going to look at this. I've been told this, but I don't know that. If you already know the answer, then it will not apply that well. It is just, I just wanted to give you one tool that they use to logically look at things. So when you look at dependent origination or depending arising, you need to put that in perspective. When I say everything is dependent arising, and so we can conclude that person or sentient being is dependent arising, and therefore they don't exist inherently. Okay, you accepted that over time in classes and stuff like that, but do you really get it? So you come with the idea that you have no clue, and let's now walk through it, and then you give reasons for it very logically. That's all that means. Okay, so that's correct. You already seen this before, right? A couple of times. I wanted to point it out again. You externalize, candlelight, cupness and everything, but also bring it in-house. Okay, the eye. So this is what we already talked about, the four points. I have it again, just so that you see it, identification of what is to be refuted. Make sure that the eye appears. Determine the mode of existence. Is it identical or separate from your five aggregates? Then the next piece is, then it must exist with the aggregates or it's independent. Okay, and without going into detail, you Keshava very nicely said the other day in the class, Sunday class, if you attended, he says, just think about it. Our body is made up of 74-80% liquid. Okay, do you find eye in that liquid? No. Is it in your bones? No. And then you can go temperature, heat in the body, blood cells, muscles. You go through the body parts. Then another thought comes to your thing. Oh, maybe it's in my mind. The eye is in my mind. And so I purposely went for that, and I found a very nice way of explaining that, a little, not very, very detailed, but enough to make a point. When the doubt arises that maybe I really exist in the mind, then check the nature of your mind. Mind has parts also. It's made up out of moments as past, present, and future. Analyze in which of these moments the real I exists. Think about that. Now, if you've taken DB class 1, Mind and Its Potential, Geshe-la went further and said, there were 51 mental factors. How many eyes do you want? Look, search for it. You should. And there are 6 major consciousness, right? The eye consciousness, the hearing consciousness, the touch, taste. We have those consciousnesses. Look, they just simply function to do one thing, what they're geared to do. Hearing, a wavelength comes to your ear. The drum moves. It gets interpreted by the mind. You hear the sound. Correct? Same thing with the eyesight. It visualizes something. It comes, it's inverted first, goes to your brain. Brain interprets the visual. But what you give name to it and the exaggeration point of view comes from here, right? Or mind. I should even point there because that's gross brain. Mind. Okay? So think about that. So if you'll find that, if you can find an eye, I would love to know. That would change the entire philosophy. Okay? But eye does not exist the way we think it exists. Okay? It is not in the aggregates. And what are the 5 aggregates? Form, feelings, discrimination, mental activities, all the planning we do, and consciousness. There would have to be 5 eyes. And you're not going to find 5 eyes. It's not one with the aggregates. Aggregates are separate things. Form is different than feelings. Feeling is different than perception, that kind of stuff. So you can't find it as one nor with each. So there can be I. Right? And we already talked about I cannot exist independently. We've gone through everything possible. Then how can I exist independently? So that's just another way of looking at it. Dependent arising, important part. Okay. Again, I think we went through this. I had that word syllogism, and I felt that it may have confused more people than helped. My intention was not to confuse. Our intention was to put some logic in it. And you know, before I even go there, let me give you just a 5 minute of how you one should think. I have a really nice brief thinking here. We have some time, so I'm going to go through it. So just close your eyes and listen. If you're by yourself and thinking about how should I meditate on emptiness, I don't have time to go through the 4-point analysis. I can't even remember the darn first one. So don't worry about all that. Okay? So think this way. So while you're meditating, there is an I which appears to exist from its own side. Right on top of that, think. The I is merely labeled. Just meditate on the meaning of the I being merely labeled. I is a name. A name does not exist from its own side. A name is given, imputed or attributed by the mind. We can completely agree with that this I is merely labeled. Concentrate on that and try to feel it. This automatically eliminates eternalism, the view of truly existent I. Now, if you want to go a little bit deeper, think like this. Question yourself. What am I doing here now? I am meditating. While thinking of I, part of the mind, like a spy, search, where do I feel the I? Within the body or outside the body? Now, if you find it's hard to pinpoint the I simply from this question, then use more forceful means. Imagine that you are falsely accused of stealing in front of your friends. At the same time as this is happening to you, watch the strong sense of I arising when you think, I am not guilty of this. If you feel there is the self within the body, leave it there and check, where does it abide? In the head, legs, arms, belly, where do you feel the I? In the chest? Somewhere from the desire and anger, from where the anger and desire arises? Where is it? If you feel this way, it's good to use this meditation to analyze whether that is true or not. Mentally go there, to your body, from the top of your head, on the tip of your toes, and look for that eye. If you can't find it, make a conclusion in your mind and focus single-pointedly on the space like emptiness of not finding. Again, when the doubt arises that maybe I exist in the mind, then check the nature of the mind. Mind also has parts. It's made out of moments, such as past, present, and future. Analyze in which of these three moments the real I exists. And when you arrive at this experience of not finding, stay in that space. Like meditation on emptiness, and let go. Okay? Thank you. So go through that sometimes, and you will have more questions. If it's not in the mind, if it's not in the body, it does not exist, then what is it? And then you'll find out that we just impute it, and because we have over years practiced of not seeing the clear nature of I, you've created all of this so-called the world that we live in and preconceived things, right? Again, go back of your mind and think about what is this topic about and how does it help you? Why is this the principal aspects of the mind? How does it liberate you? Why are this obstacle ignorance is so important to remove? And why is it important to understand the reality, the way things exist? How does it help you as a person right now? Think about that for a second. How do we see our world? Look at the preconceived notions. Let's even think about politics right now, if you want to really think about how we get myopic about this side or that side, and anything that happens anywhere, you can lose your mind over it. We do that all the time, all of us, right? We do that. Think of so many things like that. Even from different government, a terrorist for one nation is the freedom fighter for another. I mean, all these things people do and hurt each other all the time. Why? Because of ignorance. Right? If people didn't have this solid feeling of me, mine, my way, or take a highway, maybe you can still make choices, but you would be much humbler, you would be much easier to manage, and you can deal with it in a much more realistic way rather than losing your mind over it. So it's just another way of looking at how ignorance just takes you right into the whirlpool of samsara. And then at the end, that's what remains. That's what we cling on to it. And then we wonder why you were born again thinking that way and in a problem life again. So if you remove that, you can ease your way into the better state of mind, I should say, to the next rebirth. So that's why we are doing. Yes.
A student streaming on YouTube commented, we would have to be perfect to not be ignorant.
Okay. So let's think about that for a while. I am not saying that this will happen like a car turns a car and the car runs. You gotta practice this. Bodhisattvas and meditators practice this all the time, for a long time. Some people are able to realize emptiness in this life. There are examples of that, that people realize in one life. Or you are putting the seed in your mind that you are going to bring this about in the next life, so you continue with the journey. Okay? It is a continuous process, but you need to start to at least look at the way things exist, at least through knowledge. Then you incorporate it slowly, and as you practice every day, you can see that, yes, everything is there, but I shouldn't get too hung up about that it exists inherently. It's solid. It is, that's the way it is. There's no other ways. And this is just a knowledge that is telling you that you can think things in different ways, dependent arising, causes and conditions, and how conceptually we've labeled things. And then if the I is too powerful in you, then you think that's the way it is. No other way. There's no other way of thinking. Your way is the right way. Everybody else is wrong. These are the things you can undo. And as you undo, you will find more peace, more calmness, and in a better place to practice your dharma. And then this seeds at the time of your aging or a certain situation, what will come to your mind is a calmer state of mind. That means it's going to lead you to a calmer state of whatever the next rebirth is or is not, whatever you believe in, but it certainly will get you to a point that you are in a much, according to our belief in Buddhism, you will take a rebirth based on your seeds that you take with you. Okay? So think about it as you start to think about this on a daily basis, how you will see the world differently. And think about that, how we are connected. That's how you start. So I understand the question, and I can see the point he or she is making. Perfect is another word. What is perfect? That means no other obscuration, and that's understandable. You need to eradicate obscuration to even get liberated, because the mind chatters based on obscuration. So you're working through meditation and practices to slow that down, to get that out, and eventually you will come to thoughts. You will come to your mind that is looking at virtuous things, right? You still will have thoughts. You will still have concepts because you will be reading a book on emptiness or Baba Garinpoche, and that's all okay. Because you want to lead to a virtuous mindset. Okay? So anyway, good point, actually. Okay, so far? Okay, we have 15 minutes left, and so what I'm going to do is to talk very quickly about that there are three ways dependent arising exists. Okay. And I will go through that in a minute. Oops, dependent arising. Instead of going through these things, you can at least take a look at it. And we've already talked about the car. We've already talked about the cup and the cupness. But so the three ways it exists right now is, first one is, the dependent arising is, does anybody remember? What are the three ways?
The parts.
Correct.
And then merely being labeled as one of them.
Thoughts and words.
Thoughts and
causes
words.
And conditions.
Okay.
So first one is parts. Mm-hmm. Second one is causes and conditions. And the third one is words, thoughts, or labels. So let's take you have to also understand cause and effect a little bit, okay? So I have a good example of that. So I can tell you, first make a statement. It's a fact that our knowledge or assumptions and opinions are built by a structure of related concepts, notions and thoughts, and therefore they do not exist on their own right. Simply a thought, simply a notion. Okay? And so let's talk about the dependent arising of three types, and I'll give you a good example, a blade of grass. Let's take an example of that. Every effect is a product of multiple causes and conditions. Okay? So let's take a look at it. A blade of grass is an effect. It's an effect of a seed. A seed creates a cause for the blade of grass to exist. Makes sense? Simple, right? You need a seed for the blade of grass. No seed, no grass. Correct? But you need multiple causes and conditions. For example, you need moisture, warmth, light. So you need multiple causes and conditions for that effect to take place. Causes and conditions. The causes precede the effects and the effects follow the causes. They don't exist simultaneously. Now think about that for a second. The seed and the blade of grass don't exist simultaneously. The seed has to go in there. Causes and conditions have to happen for the blade of grass to come up. Look at it differently. Let's take dinner. If you want to have dinner, you must gather some required causes, like getting groceries. Correct? You go to the shop, you get groceries because you want to make dinner. When you're cutting the dinner on the kitchen table, does dinner appear? No, it takes time. Then you put it together and make the dinner for dinner to happen. Right? Dinner does not appear simultaneously when you're cutting the vegetables. So the causes is cutting the vegetable. The effect, after some time, will be dinner. That's all logic thinking. You need to think this way because when we say things are dependent arising, you need to see how they come into play. So another way to take a look at it is, let's just give you a good example. You got a blade of grass. Let's even a car. We already know none of the parts make up the car itself, right? The individual parts themselves are not car. But when you put it together, you can call it a car as a label. There are causes and conditions that bring the car materials together, and you have a car. So you need parts, causes and conditions, and then you designate a label on it. That's how things exist. So conclusion is that when you look at a person is also a product. We were born out of parents. We are a product. So parts. We can call it parts, your body parts. Also, your youth is not you're not the same person as you were in the youth. You can say there was a different part of you. Right? You can see your parts, causes and conditions. Can you say we have causes and conditions? Causes and conditions is birth, life, everything that happens in our life, causes and conditions, learning, training, whatever we do to become who we are. Right? So you can see that, and then somebody labels your name. That's Linda, that's Hemant, that's Sandra, that's Alex. And that's how we see things. We are all dependent arising. Does this make sense? We need parts, causes and conditions, and ultimately labels, words. Clear? So we can say that by themselves, those causes and effects by themselves don't inherently exist. You need a cause for the effect. You need the cause for an effect. It goes on that way, right? So they cannot exist inherently. Therefore, you can say that none of this existence that we see exists inherently because they are dependent arising. You need parts, you need causes and conditions, and you need these labels to communicate and label these things. That's how things exist. You can go further back. Even the parts require parts. It can go on and on and on. But in other words, you need some parts, causes and conditions, and a label that becomes then how we see things. Okay. I have a meditation which will take us 5 to 10 minutes. We'll summarize it next time, and I have a very nice slide here, so let's do a meditation. I also wanted to let you know that emptiness is not a blind faith. You must be very reasonable, very pragmatic, very logical. So with that in mind, let's do our meditation. This is a four-point analysis on the I. The meditation is similar to the four-point analysis we did before. The difference is that we will analyze the personal pronouns we use to identify ourselves, like I and me. It sounds weird, but please just bear with me. First, bring your mind an appearance of yourself that seems concretely exist. Do this by thinking of yourself, such as who you are, what you want out of life, how you are going to go about getting it, what progress you think you are making, what problems you are facing, and how you intend to solve them. I encourage you to use terms like me and I, and to feel your presence. Remember, the main purpose of this part of the meditation is to bring them to mind the appearance of your personal existence as truly existing. So don't get carried away with thinking about some of the topics we've proposed. Decide that if you truly existed, you would be findable as the labels I or me, or you would exist independently of those labels. If you are findable as a label I and me, you could not truly exist, as you are none, you are one thing, while those are two different labels. If you were findable either as the label I or me, you would not truly exist, as you are a person and these labels are pronouns, descriptive words. Also, if you were the label I or me, you could not truly exist, as these labels do not truly exist. They do not truly exist, as they are dependent arising. They are dependent arising as they are products of their causes. As pronouns, these words or these sounds that form part of the language, the sound I is a product of air exhaled from your lungs, vocal cords, and different positions of your mouth, to include tongue and lips. Then you require contractions of your muscles in your face, as these words are dependently arising or arisen. They do not exist in their own right. You do not exist independently of the labels, whether they are I, me, your family, or given names, etc. If not for these labels, you would not appear at all. Your body or mind may appear, but not you. Think about that. Determine that I do not truly exist, as my existence depends on labels that are not me, and these are dependent arising as well. Focus your attention in the absence of inherently existing person you thought you were. Stay there for a while. Now dedicate the efforts you've made to attend this session, cultivated a positive motivation at the beginning, listened attentively throughout the session, sought the meaning of what was said, and meditated without distraction. and dedicated all to achieve ultimate objective of Buddhahood, so that you may be able to liberate each and every living being from their miseries and establish them in a supreme happiness of Buddhahood. And due to these merits, may I quickly attain the Buddhahood and lead all living beings without exception into the enlightened state. Like Lama Tsongkhapa, may I be able to offer extensive benefits equaling the limitless sky to all sentient beings and teachings of Buddha. And from now on, in all future lives, may all living beings abide in equanimity, free of bias, attachment, and anger. May all living beings have happiness and its causes. May all living beings be free from suffering and its causes. May all living beings not be separated from sorrowless bliss. I myself will bring about this alone. Thank you. So I wanted to just say, first of all, thank you for putting up with this. This is not an easy topic, nice narrative, nice story, historical. You really got to put your mind to it and understand the concept that we've talked about. But the truth from Buddha is one who understands the emptiness, you will liberate yourself. So the way you do it is you really think hard. And these questions will come up. The questions that are being asked are perfect examples. You got to go through that. First, understand what we are saying, then think about it. So you listen, you now think, and then meditate. Meditate on external things, meditate on internal I. And what you should come to, thinking, your mind should lead you at some point, and I'm not going to put in words, to some conclusion on how things truly exist. We went through some examples and established how I does not exist. We've talked about any external things, look at it and you see their dependent arising. They don't inherently exist. So think how the phenomena works. These energies that just keep on due to causes and conditions, all of these things happen. We label it as where we are as our nominal self, and we call it, here it is. And that's how we see things. And that's fine for conventionalities. We need to go to work. We need to stay with each other. We need to communicate. We need to develop bodhicitta so that nominal existence still exists in a very mere state. Just that we don't exist. If you truly look individually, you don't find that person by its own essence. It's how these energies do work, right? And we are all connected in that way. If everything is dependent arising, think how many times we have touched each other in many ways, in many lifetimes. And that's why Geshe Law will so nicely say, think of all the mother sentient beings that have helped you, not only in this life, but lifetimes. And so you must repay their kindness. And that's why we must generate bodhicitta. And a good thing about bodhicitta is when you're helping others, you're not self-cherishing. So it just gets rid of that big I. Think about it. When you're thinking about somebody else, you're not thinking about I. And I think it's 8:30 right now, right on the money. Is there any questions? Not right now, but what we will do is, if something is really bugging you that you need to know, let's write it down. Let's bring it together. And next two sessions, we'll start to talk about some of these things to clarify a few things if you have any questions. But you cannot, it's hard to clarify if you have not done any readings. And I suggest to you that you please read, try to understand, look at it from different angles and see how these things are. And then contemplate how well this emptiness will liberate you. And what does that mean? Okay? Thank you. I'll hang around.
Thank you. Thank you, Hemant.